You know what they say.
What do they say?
Another day, another Daily Titan podcast.
I have heard this said. That's crazy.
Really?
Yeah.
Because I'm the one that started saying it.
Well.
And I'm about to say it again right now. When I go, what's going on, Titans? Welcome back to another episode of Daily Titan Podcast, or DT Pod for short. In today's episode, we're going to be breaking down volume 118, issue number 7 of the Daily Titan student newspaper. In this episode, we're going to be going over a couple of stories, including a recap of the recent fall concert that happened here on campus. We're also going to be talking about a visit from Turning Point on our campus that happened last week. We're also going to be going over an opinion about mental health and its role with AI. And we're also going to be discussing the women's soccer team a little bit. Anyways, before I forget, I just want to introduce myself. I'm Kabir Kansara, one of your co-hosts and your layout editor, and I'm joined with
other co-host and news assistant editor, Damiana Gobrell.
All right, then, Titans, stay tuned.
And for the first time ever, CSUF hosted a fall concert on campus very recently. This happened on Saturday.
Yeah, this happened on Saturday.
Yes, this is crazy. And the story is written by none other than our co-host, Kabir. It featured performances from four artists.
Yes.
First up was The Tulips.
And then Snow Wife.
And then Paris, Texas.
And then it ended with Zach Fox.
Yes. I had a really great time, personally.
Personally, me too. I had a really fun time covering it.
I was covering it.
It was really cool.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of Paris, Texas, and I've been familiar with Zach Fox's work for a couple of years now. So seeing them live was like, that was my third time seeing PT. So I was just, I was just really excited for them to just be around. But the fact that I had the chance to cover it, like, that was just really cool. Mm. I don't know. I played my annoying journalist card and like I chased that interview. So I got to talk to them after their show. Like,
you got to do what you got to do.
I got to do what I got to do. They were just really cool people, and overall the event was really cool. Just hearing about it from like the ASI perspective and sort of like just how it kind of came to be, because this is part of the ASI wellness initiative. This is sort of like how they wanted the, because they have like the whole eight pillars of wellness that they're sort of using as a basis to sort of improve the quality of student life on campus, and like holding this concert sort of focused on like improving the social life of students, as well as like also, like, a little bit of the financial life, because it was a relatively affordable ticket.
Yeah,
for $20.
$20.
Yeah. Because seeing artists of this caliber, like, outside of campus, I would assume that's, like, a $65 ticket at the minimum. Mm-hmm. It was really cool, because it felt sort of like almost a mini festival in a day. I was at, the Garden did, like, One Strange Night in Orange County, and it felt very similar to that vibe of, like, even though it's centralized to one area with a set, lineup and everything, and it's just one day, there were so many other things going on that you could be a part of at the same time that it never felt like you were shoehorned in just going for the music. Like, it felt like there was sort of something to appeal for everybody, at
least.
So they had student vendors there selling like artwork. I got to talk to like art students that were selling like personal prints, different things like that. Someone had some custom made business cards. That was really cool. But ASI also did like their own stuff. They had their own activities. They did like glitter tattoos and face painting and things like that. But when it comes to the actual people working the event, ASI enlisted a lot of student volunteers for this, which I also thought was kind of cool, because you sort of, in a way, it benefits them because they can sort of open people's minds up to being a part of ASI.
Yeah.
And sort of like they can help sort of recruit new staff through that. But it also gives students a chance to be a part of the event and sort of have a larger role in the event. And it also gives them a chance to sort of see the campus from a different perspective as someone that's helping out rather than just attending. So there's a certain other side of the coin that you get to see.
This is true.
But, I mean, you were at the event. How did you feel just being a part of it, just, like, as an attendee?
Like I said before, I had a great time. Honestly, when I went, I was the most excited for The Tulips, just because I've been a fan of them for a really long time. But my favorite set ended up being Paris, Texas.
I think everyone's was.
Oh, it was really great. Like, the vibes were amazing. Everybody was dancing. I was there with, like, a large group of friends. It was a really, like, memorable night. I had a great time.
Yeah.
What about you?
I had a great time as well. The Tulips were great. Like, their set, they sounded really good.
They really did.
And, like, the Omnicord thing, that they pulled out an Omnicord, which is like a nostalgic music device that sort of has like an 80s sort of tone to it.
They played a lot of their songs. They were like, oh, this is the first time I'm like playing the song on the Omnicord. So it also kind of gave it that like exclusive
feel. Yeah, there was something special about it. And also I think just it being the first fall concert to sort of have these artists here that are not only like relevant to our age group and things like that. Like, I was talking to Tulips after their performance, and they were saying like they really enjoyed the crowd because they felt like they were singing to people that they knew could relate to the music, like being in the same age group and things like that.
Right. And then Snow Wife. I personally had never heard her music before this. I think she was probably, like, the one artist that I was, like,
I was the least familiar with her as well. Yeah. I listened to a little bit of her music, like, walking over to the event, just so I can kind of get a feel for, like, what was coming.
But her set also, there were no bad sets.
No.
But her set was actually truly amazing. I enjoyed it. It was...
Yeah. No, her set was really solid. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. I really enjoyed the dancing.
Yeah.
I like, on a personal, I used to dance. I danced for, like, 12 years. So, like, I understand sort of, like, the level of stamina you need to have to just be on stage for that long doing choreo, no matter the difficulty, but just the sort of endurance it takes to do a whole set like that. Mm. But also, like, her vocals sounded great throughout. And she was singing and dancing.
Singing
like,
and dancing.
It's like Beyonce with a cartwheel almost.
I
like,
know. Oh, my God. It was very impressive. It was her and two backup dancers.
And her backup dancers are great as well. They brought their own little flair to it. But I feel like they also sort of, like, it was very clear that Snow White was the shiner out of the trio because, like, obviously it's her music, but I mean, like, it didn't feel like her dancers were dancing any less to sort of make her look better. It felt like she was keeping up with them in, like, lockstep, which I think is, like, very appreciated from, like, an artist perspective or from a fan viewing an artist perspective.
And then, I guess, since we've talked about all the other artists, how did we feel about Zach Fox headliner?
I really enjoyed it. I'm familiar with Zach Fox through his appearance on Kenny Beat Show The Cave on YouTube. That's sort of, like, in my mind, that sort of, like, blew him up to this level that he's at now. That was, like, the start of it. But I honestly wasn't really sure what to expect because he has a rap album available on Spotify. But he also has really dove into this, like, world of DJing head first. And he's also really, I feel like, quickly found his identity in that, you know, sort of highlighting Black culture through his music and, like, the samples he mixes while also imbuing a sort of, like, global culture, like, and he still pays homage to, like, the roots of just EDM culture and the sort of, like, club culture as a whole. Like, I remember he mixed, I think it was Music Sounds Better With You, he mixed that with, like, some Brazilian funk, and I was very caught off guard but also very impressed.
Oh, that's cool. That's
yeah,
so cool.
Yeah, so he was just a great set. And yeah,
yeah,
how did you feel about it?
You know what? I left before Zach Fox. I had plans with other friends.
Ah.
And then, so my whole plan was, because I didn't release the lineup, like, beforehand. So I was just like, I'll stay there for, like, the first few artists. And then my plans were at 7. I ended up leaving at, like, 8:30. But, I did not end up seeing Zach Fox. I did see videos, which I'm a little sad about because I was excited to see Zach Fox. But honestly, I feel like, just the other sets and the other, like, things, like, it didn't really make me feel that bad about missing my set, just because overall it was, like, it was such a great experience.
Yeah, I feel like there was never a low point in the night once the music started. And I thought what was really cool is, like, obviously to close with a DJ.
And our MC. John Ray, Raisha Fierce.
Shout out Raisha Fierce.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was really cool. I got to talk to them as well.
Mm-hmm.
And they gave some really cool insight on just, like, what it meant to them to sort of be able to represent, like, all the cultures they're a part of, whether it's queer culture, Black culture, Filipino culture, things like that. They spoke about, like, the sort of impact they felt like they had on the campus.
Mm-hmm.
But they also spoke about, like, just how it felt to sort of, like, prepare for the moment, being a theater major and all that. Like, sort of, like, how they turned this into their own little show without taking the shine away from the actual event.
And I think that they really did. They did an amazing job.
I was entertained.
It was fully, it was just, like, the gaps between when the artists, like, came up. Like, it was such, like, the songs they were playing, it was really, it, like, got
it
the audience,
playful.
Like, hyped up.
Yeah.
Like, it was just, everybody was, like, singing along. There was Love by Keisha Cole. There was...
Bangers. I heard a lot of Beyonce.
I heard a lot of Beyonce.
I do want to spin back to something you mentioned a little bit earlier about, like, not knowing set list times and things like that. Because I was also very curious about that because I feel like in prior experiences of Spring Concert that ASI has done, they've at least given out a time of when the show sort of starts or when doors open, and that kind of information just wasn't available to students this time around.
Yeah, it's a surprise.
Yeah, so I was kind of curious about it, so I asked around, and part of it is just for student retention and attendance.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't want to deal with, like, you know, a lot of students coming at one time just for an artist and then sort of, like, departing the crowd, or sort of, like, they didn't want to deal with any kind of, like, attendance surges with having, like, a lot of people in line at one time and then a lull and then a lot of people in line at another time.
This makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, which, I mean, from a strategic standpoint, that worked out very well for them because you had to stay for the entire event because you never know who was coming up next, which I feel like added a layer of surprise to it.
It was really fun. Honestly, I enjoyed
it.
That wasn't, like, a critique of anything. I feel like it really just worked to enhance the overall event.
No, definitely. It was... I feel like sort of having a level of surprise like that, like sort of knowing who's on the bill but not knowing when they're coming up, it builds like a level of anticipation because you know if it's like, if it's not now, it's going to be soon. I think that was just a very positive step for them to sort of bounce back from some of the mishaps that have happened with Spring Concert. And I also think that it sort of served to just sort of unite the campus in a way that it hasn't felt before at least a concert in a little bit.
Yeah.
Because it almost felt like there were no downsides to that night.
Like,
yeah. Like, there were no drawbacks. There was no... It didn't feel like there was a catch to anything. Mm-hmm. It was just, you show up, you enjoy your night, and you leave with a good memory. And that's that.
This is true. I have a question to just kind of, like, wrap things up.
Okay.
If you could have, like, one artist, like, visit campus for a future concert, fall or spring, or just wherever, who would it be?
That's a tough one. I'm not gonna lie. Like, my prayers have already been answered because I saw Aminé here. Mm. And, I'm a big Aminé fan. But if I had to think... I would love to see Freddie Gibbs on campus or like a Kate Renata set. Maybe together, maybe Kate not, but
would be good. Right.
I would really enjoy either of those. What about you?
I think for me, honestly, maybe if I could pick like two artists that I want to see come to campus.
Like an opener and a closer?
Yeah. The Marias and then Caliuchis. These are people that I have been trying to see in concert forever. I think, hey guys, come to Fullerton.
It's been a busy week on campus.
You could say that, yeah.
A lot of visitors.
Mm-hmm.
Some from political organizations such as Turning Point. A couple of members came to speak at an open forum event that was held outside of Humanities last week. And here to talk to us about it was a reporter on the scene, our news editor, our very own champion of news.
Oh my god,
Michelle King.
Yay. Hello, back again.
Yes, how does it feel? Wow.
Awesome, third time's a charm.
Wow, how'd the event feel?
It was really interesting. I thought it was really interesting to kind of hear a lot of different viewpoints going on. Despite all of the kind of opposing viewpoints and strong viewpoints that were being presented, it was a very tame event. It was good discussion.
Yeah.
It didn't really get too crazy or anything.
Were you there for the entire duration of the event?
I sadly was not. I did have class, but I was there for about an hour and a half, 2 hours. I missed a lot of, unfortunately, the part where actual Turning Point speakers were, and I caught the portion that it was... The event was held in collaboration with Living Waters Ministry, and they had a speaker come out, Ray Comfort, and I caught all of his kind of debate and discussion with students.
Yeah, I also sort of ended up at the event. I was walking by with some friends, and we ended up seeing what was going on. So we just decided to sort of tap in and see what was happening. It was very peculiar. There was a lot of like different signs for different topics going around, whether that's, you know, pro-life sort of material or different things like that. But they were handing out books actually by the speaker, Ray Comfort. At some point, I ended up with like 6 copies of that book. There were just a lot of people walking around handing things out.
Collecting them.
Yes, at that point I am starting a shelf.
Wow.
Yeah. But I stayed around the event and sort of heard some of what the people asking questions were saying. And it seemed like there was a lot of talk about like just various topics that are sort of more like, I guess, controversial, sort of hot button issues on like, you know, in a political sense, things like sexuality, pregnancy issues, gender issues, race issues, things like that. But as a reporter, what was your sort of perspective on it, seeing this open discourse?
I think it was really interesting. I think it's valuable to have this type of open discussion, especially right now where there's so much tension going on. I think it's a good thing for people to be speaking openly and not be fighting, you know, not like openly arguing. It can get heated with, you know, if you have a strong belief in something and somebody's telling you that's not how they see it, it's not uncommon to get frustrated, but... Being able to speak, especially on college campuses right now, is, I think, a good thing. And I was impressed with the number of people there. You know, not everyone there agreed with what was going on, but it was still, I think, a good sign that so many students still went, even if they weren't necessarily agreeing with what was happening.
Definitely.
Yeah, and I know, like, we were talking about, like, Ray Comfort. There were other guest speakers. There were, council members from nearby cities. Do you want, like, for a nearby city, to be more accurate? Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Council member Amy Fan West from Westminster came out and spoke. She spoke about, at this time, how important it is to defend your First Amendment right and to go out and speak.
Yeah.
And speak your mind, just with the amount of things that are going on with tensions rising in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And, so that was... Cool to hear, cool to see kind of local officials coming out as well.
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely. It was very sort of odd to see how large the production was at the event. Like, yeah, I saw they had such large tables set up with a lot of broadcast equipment. Mm-hmm. This whole thing was live streamed through, I believe, the Living Waters Ministry YouTube channel.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But it was insane to see how large of a production it was, because it wasn't mm-hmm. just like sort of like a town crier guy on a soapbox situation of him just like saying what he thought to the world, but it was a very like dedicated platform and sort of dedicated environment. And it seemed like the campus also sort of responded in that way. I mean, the quad squad was out there with their orange visors, sort of keeping an eye on things. Mm-hmm. And it also, the event wrapped up at about 2:00, I believe, which I believe is in line with the TPM mandate that's mm-hmm. on campus for time, place, and manner in terms of protesting and like public action.
Yeah.
So despite it being such a divisive sort of conversation or them touching on such controversial issues, they did it in a way that still sort of respected the campus and allowed for the open forum to maintain its sort of civility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I appreciate that it was there and that it was an option for students to participate. I also appreciate that it had its kind of time, you know what I mean? Like, for people who didn't want to be involved, it did take up quite a bit of space on campus, not in a negative way, but it was just a large event. So it was kind of nice that, like, once it was done, school just went back to normal. I didn't, you know, interfere with a lot going on.
And then I know you weren't there for like the entire duration of the event, but from what you noticed, or like what was just written in the article in general, How were like students like perceiving this event? Like, what was like the general student reaction?
There was a good mix, I think. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of people there who were really supportive of Turning Point and of the ministry who was there. They wanted to come and see those figures. There were also a lot of students who were critical of it, who didn't want this type of event on their campus. And also, like, obviously there's a bunch of people who went up to speak. So people who were not necessarily for or against the event, but just interested in engaging with the event. So I wouldn't say necessarily like there was a certain way, like looking at the crowd, that everyone kind of felt about it. It just kind of, it was an interesting mix, and it went down really well. Like, I think went well. There wasn't any, like I've said, like there was no violence. There weren't people arguing in the streets.
I think for such a polarizing sort of event to take place on campus, it went about as well as you could hope it could go.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
On the topic of going, I think it's about time.
Yeah, I think it's time I head up.
Well then, we'll see you.
We'll see ya.
Hey Titans, this is Jaden Lovelady, the editor-in-chief of The Daily Titan. Stay connected and follow us at The Daily Titan on social media. Be sure to pick up a paper on campus in the orange newsstands, and if you want more stories, check us out online. See you next week.
We have an opinion from writer Emma Peterson about how ChatGPT and just, I guess, artificial intelligence in general is not or should not be a go-to for like mental health conversations or just health conversations in general.
Yeah, this opinion I feel like was very timely, just considering like the sort of like every day the rise in AI is kind of getting further and further ahead of us. So I think that this article is pretty timely in terms of like just I feel like day by day people turn towards AI a little bit more and more in terms of like relying on it to like, you know, help you out with like grocery lists, things like that. But I feel like this article kind of hits it on the nose that it can almost be unhealthy when you begin to rely on AI for sort of like a personal space or like a headspace to vent to and things like that.
Yeah, and then I think what this article talks about a little bit is like how, like why this is so effective or why some people kind of turn to AI in general, just because it is really efficient at kind of replicating that like considerate human tone. It just like, if you're engaging with AI like conversationally like that, it's kind of programmed to give you responses that you want to hear.
Yeah, I think you really hit it on the head with like sort of saying what you want to hear, because these AI models are trained based on what you feed into them. So when you talk to them with like a certain positive tone, they respond back to you with that same positive tone.
And it's not just a positive tone, it's a positive tone that like tries to like imitate like human like connection and emotion. The problem that this article poses, however, is that while it can, like, imitate that, it is not human.
Right.
And it doesn't have the same qualifications. It doesn't have qualifications that are comparable in any sense to people who are, like medical professionals or mental health professionals specifically.
Of course, because there are like plenty of years and like just hours spent with learned experience, whether that's in classrooms or out in the field, whether that's in a hospital or some other sort of lab. The AI, while it may have access to information, it does not have access to experience.
It also doesn't really have access. It doesn't have the ability to like judge whether the information that it's like giving you is appropriate, timely, like any. It doesn't have that like reasoning capability that professionals do have.
Of course. And while this has always kind of been a concern with just the advancement of AI as a whole, it sort of has become more dangerous. The writer of the article, Emma, cited a story from NPR about a 16-year-old boy who committed suicide because he was sort of encouraged to buy an AI model.
Yeah, and it's cases like that that are really sad, and I think they do call for the need to, like, inspect these sources and how children or, like, more vulnerable communities especially are interacting with AI such as that. I think something else that's interesting that the article does bring up is just, like, kind of varying reasons that people would turn to AI. One of them, of course, is like its model, like kind of sucks you into wanting to confide more and more with AI, like language learning models in general. But a lot of it is also like the anonymity of being able to just like confide in like something free, something like secret on the internet, and then you don't have to like go through it. Just it does make it more accessible, but I think that accessibility like comes at the cost of quality healthcare.
Definitely. And especially when it comes to healthcare, not even just mental healthcare, but also just like people looking up like how should they handle certain injuries or things like that, rather than seeking out genuine professional medical advice. And I mean, part of that is just like a barrier to entry, obviously, medical bills and things
like
that.
There's also stigma around especially mental health conversations.
Of course, of course. So people might think that AI is sort of like this crutch that they can kind of lean on in order to get that support. But when that support is sort of unchecked and also unregulated to a degree, it's not real support. Mm-mm. It's sort of just filler. And when there's so much filler, like it can sort of like spill over into like worsening conditions, whether it's physically because you're not getting the right sort of help or health, or mentally, as was mentioned in the article.
I fully agree. And then another point, I guess, that was brought up later on in the article, and I thought this kind of like it was kind of some of the concluding remarks of the article. They discuss mental health resources that are in fact available to specifically like CSUF students on campus. Mm-hmm. I thought that was very important, just because it like it offers like a reasonable, like feasible alternative to people who might like find themselves wanting that support, that healthcare, but like not really knowing where to start because of like the barriers of entry that we were talking about.
Of course. Yeah, I think this article really highlights an issue that's becoming more and more prevalent in our society. And I do think it was a very nice touch to sort of include some of these resources towards the end that students can sort of turn to. Because you truly never know like what's happening to someone behind closed doors or the sort of support that they're getting. So it's always important to sort of offer that support where you can and when opportunities sort of arise.
Yeah.
So kudos to the writer for including some of those resources and highlighting where students can go and seek help.
I do think that it points to real issues that are facing, I think, a lot of people, especially like around our age group, like getting into college, like people like our age, maybe younger, maybe just like it's kind of a problem that is seen like in a lot of demographics, but that like inability to connect or that like fear of like being vulnerable with the people around them, like whether that be mental health professionals or just like vulnerability and like making new friendships or like romantic relationships. So like having that like secret person that's like not really gonna like judge you or anything.
I think honestly you hit it on the head, because that's sort of what I was thinking as I was reading this article. It kind of feels like people are treating AI in a similar way I feel like people were treating social media not too long ago, of sort of like looking at it as a void that you can sort of scream into because it doesn't come back to you. Of like people can go on like their private story, close friends, whatever it may be, and sort of just rant about their day, air out whatever dirty laundry they may have in their life or others' lives, and sort of just kind of let it all out and just let it sit there. Whether it's, like, you know, a spam account. But now those sort of things that would be, like, you know, a 900-word caption on a spam account are now being condensed down into this, like, 50-word problem that you now feed to a ChatGPT model.
That can answer you. And people just, like, have this view that ChatGPT in general is just, like, this all-knowing being that's going to be able to solve all of your problems. It's not.
It's Google, but you just watch it type out your answer.
And I think also people just think that it is fully like infallible just because of the way that it talks, but it makes mistakes. It's not reliable in that at all.
Yeah. And I think that just as students, the more we learn about AI as a whole, the more sort of cautious we need to be about the way it's used, mm-hmm. because like obviously cases like what's being mentioned in this article become more and more prevalent.
Yeah.
But as we move forward as a society, and obviously, I mean, I'm sure you've seen it in your college classes, but AI is becoming more of a sort of a prevalent sort of factor in education as well.
Yeah.
And I think that sort of introducing it to students in this sort of setting, especially young students, whether they're in high school, middle school, mm-hmm. whatever it may be, introducing AI to them at such a young age, sort of, I feel maybe like builds it into their like social habits of like, yeah. oh, if I don't have a friend to talk to, I can just go on ChatGPT and like sort of type out my thoughts.
That's a really great point. Yeah, I just, I think this article like kind of hit that point really well.
Definitely.
That, like,
I think there's a very large can of worms here that this article genuinely like, begins to pry open.
It really does an effective job of pointing out that like while AI use is really tempting, or like using AI as like a confidant is really tempting, it doesn't really like solve the issues that are causing you to like want to look for that like relationship in the first place.
Yeah, I agree.
Yes.
Well, I think there's more to say, but
too much to say for an episode,
so we're gonna save these for another time. But I guess we gotta move on now.
We might have to move on now.
Okay.
I
think it's about time we kick it on over to sports. So we're gonna be chatting with Sergio Gonzalez, our makeshift sports correspondent and official digital managing editor.
What's going on?
Not a whole lot. So what's happening with women's soccer this week?
They just keep on winning. They've won 10 of 12 this season. They have yet to lose a game. 10 wins, 2 ties.
That's not a bad record at all in my eyes.
They're 3-0-1 in conference play so far.
Shout out conference play.
Yes, sir. They just keep on winning.
Yes, sir. So how did this game on Sunday go for them?
It went pretty good. They started off a little bit quiet. It was 0-0 throughout the first half. And then they found their stride a little bit in the second half. Cameron Cruz, she scored the first goal of the game in the 55th minute. And then she had a second at the 82nd minute on a header. So,
think they call that a brace?
I think they do. But a pretty big moment for her. Obviously, the team's been going through a little bit, as what we've known.
Yeah, they faced some adversity.
Yes, for sure. So obviously, they're playing with a lot of emotion right now. Coach Damian Brown mentioned it a little bit in his interview with Dominic Crenshaw, who wrote the story. And just an overall great win for the Titans and boosting team morale for sure.
Definitely. And with this win, what do you sort of project for them coming in their next games?
I mean, it's just a matter of keeping up their stride, like. They've yet to be hiccuped at any point in the season. I mean, obviously, off-the-field stuff is kind of... I mean, it's no easy way to play through that.
No, definitely.
But they've continued to fight as a team, keep their composure. They've looked strong. I mean, they keep shutting out their opponents. Isaac Ranson with another clean sheet. He's been awesome this year. There's no stopping this team right now from what it seems.
Definitely. And then when it comes to this winning record... Obviously, the team is putting in a lot of work, putting in a lot of effort, but what do their opponents look like? You know, are they sort of cakewalking them? Are these, like, sort of, like, lower-ranked opponents, or are they really, like, taking on tough competition and fighting out for wins every time?
They're pretty decent competition. One thing, though, Fullerton controls these games, but I don't think they're 100% dominating, but I also feel like that's just the way it goes. I mean, they're taking advantage of their opportunities. Like, they're not winning, like, 4-0 or anything, but also, like, that's a big ask in soccer. But they've had a ton of shutouts. From what I'm looking at right now, they've had a total of 9 through 12 games, and that alone is pretty absurd. I mean, they're at the top of leaderboards, not only in the Big West, but among the national leaderboards. So it's exactly what we want to see out of this program.
Titans acting like Titans.
Mm-hmm. But we're made of.
Yes, sir. So what comes next for soccer? What's your next game going to be? When's that going to be at?
So they played the last couple of games on the road. They played the last couple of games at home, and now they're going to be hitting the road. They're going to go to UC Santa Barbara next up, who they actually got eliminated by last season.
A little bit of a revenge tour.
Possibly.
Okay, then.
But they're going to be entering a 3-game road trip, and they won't be back here for another 2 to 3 weeks. But we'll see. I mean, nothing slowed them down just yet, so hopefully they can keep it going.
Definitely. How did they compare on the road to playing at home?
That's a great question, actually. Let's see. They are 4-0 on the road. So, undefeated. I mean, throughout the season, sure. But
I mean, yeah.
Then at home, they're 6-0-2.
Okay, then.
So, we're stopping them, hopefully.
High hopes for them. A lot of expectations.
Hope they can keep on rolling.
Definitely. And hoping for the best for the team as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir. That's about all I got. You got anything else you want to share?
No, just go Titans. Praying for Ashlyn Gwynn and Lauren Turner.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Yes. And hopefully the team can keep on rolling. And yeah.
All right, then. I think it's about time you roll on out of here. We got to keep it moving.
Yes, sir. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Thank you for coming. Mm-hmm.
And that's it for this week's episode of the DT Pod. Be sure to pick up a copy of the Daily Titan on campus or check us out at dailytitan.com to read the articles mentioned in today's episode. Thank you all for listening. And as always, if you like us, we love you.
Whoa, 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 Titans. Don't go anywhere just yet, because you know we got to take a moment to get thankful. So please join me in giving some thank yous to our executive producer, Sergio Gonzalez and Jaden Lovelady. We're also going to give another thank you to our producer, Michelle King. Another thank you is going out to our assistant producers, Giselle Medina and Raniel Santos. We're also going to be giving a thank you to Bijan Susharisade for providing the music you hear in this episode. And the biggest thank you of them all is going to be going out to all of you that tune into this episode and listen to us speak. Thank you guys all for tuning in to this week's episode. Make sure you pick up a copy of the paper when you're out on campus and tap in with us on dailytitan.com. We'll see you guys around. Thank you.